Good morning. On behalf of the New York State Cessation Center, I would like to turn the call over now to Ms. Annie Beigel.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Annie Beigel, Manager of Cessation Programs for the New York State Department of Health Tobacco Control Program. And on behalf of the New York State Tobacco Cessation Center Collaborative, the New York State Smokers Quitline, I'd like to welcome you to today's conference call, Helping Clients Who Aren't Ready to Quit. And our featured speaker today is Dr. Jonathan Fader, Assistant Professor at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine and member of the nationally recognized Motivational Interviewing Trainers Network. On our last call, we covered the components of motivational interviewing. So on today's call, we'll be discussing applying those components with the patient who's not ready to quit. And it's important for you, the healthcare clinician, to keep in mind that tobacco use dependence is a chronic disease that often requires repeated intervention and multiple attempts to quit. So cessation is a process, and most patients will not succeed on the first attempt. But your role in this process is to continue to identify, document tobacco use status, and treat every tobacco user seen in a healthcare setting. So when you do this, it keeps your patient in the cessation process and can greatly impact abstinence rates. So it's important that you understand and fully understand that cessation is not so much about success and failure, but rather it's a process with many bumps along the road, and your role is to continue to identify each tobacco user and help your patient along this road to abstinence. And we are pleased to offer continuing education hours, including CME, CEU, OASAS clock hours, and CRCE. And to fulfill the requirements for these continuing education credits providers, they require us to disclose the following. Dr. Fader has no real or perceived vested interests that relate to this presentation. There are no commercial supporters of this activity. And to obtain continuing education credits, follow the instructions on the course credit and evaluation forms. All applications must be received within 2 weeks of today's call. And now, it's my pleasure to hand the call over to Dr. Jonathan Fader. Dr. Fader?
Well, thank you so much, Annie, and I'd like to thank the New York State Cessation Center Network, and also and Annie for your hard work in arranging this call, and also Pat Bax, the New York State Quitline. Both of you have been so helpful at organizing this. It's a pleasure to be back with all you and to pick up our conversation for those of you that attended and joined into the first call. If you'll go to your PowerPoint display, I'm going to take you through the slides, and hopefully we can have a nice discussion here. It'll be mostly me talking, but hopefully we can start to think about some of the great introductory points that Annie mentioned throughout her introduction. So if you go to just to the disclosure, I'm going to doubly swear myself in here on the second slide. I have no real or perceived vested interests that relate to this presentation, nor do I have any relationships with pharmaceutical companies, biomedical device manufacturers, and or other corporations whose products or services are related to pertinent therapeutic areas. So now we got through that. If you go to the training objectives, the next slide, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I hope to accomplish with you all together on this phone call. And I just want to make sure I'm hearing a little bit of feedback. So please, even if you think you're already muted, if you could just check and star 6 to make sure that you're muted if you haven't already done so. So what do we hope to accomplish today? Well, first of all, as Annie alluded to, in the previous call we talked a little bit about what motivational interviewing is, to give you a sense of the introduction to the principles of motivational interviewing. Hopefully what we're going to do today is understand how we're going to apply those principles when we're talking specifically with tobacco users and those who may not yet be ready to begin this process of stopping smoking cigarettes or using tobacco. So we're going to also talk about strategies that you may use when you're trying to combine motivational enhancement or motivational interviewing into the 5R framework, the framework that most people think about or many people think about when they're talking about smoking cessation. And then, as Annie talked about earlier, which I think was an excellent point, this is a tough process. There's a long and complicated process, stages of change, as we talked about in the last phone call. And for a provider who's working around tobacco use, and ceasing tobacco use with a client, this can be a very difficult procedure. It can be a very difficult process and very frustrating. So we're going to talk a little bit about how you, as a provider, as a clinician, can stay motivated. One thing I'll say to you all is that, you know, as I work in primary care and mental health settings, and so I interchange the words patient and client. So you may hear me refer to people that we work with as clients or patients, and just going to use those words interchangeably during this phone call because I know many of you use either or both of those terms. If you go to the next slide, we're going to have some advice here from a very wise counselor. Yoda, I can't do a good Yoda impression, but let me try here.
Named must be your fear. Before banish it, you can.
So that's my best Yoda imitation. I hope that serves for all you guys. And if, you know, maybe when we get to the question answer period, someone can top that, I definitely recommend that you call in. So why do I have a Yoda up here? Well, one of the reasons that I think this quote is so important when we're thinking about behavior change is that certainly when you think about theories around behavior change, most theoreticians will talk about the idea that in order for someone to start talking about reasons why they want to quit smoking, they really got to talk about the reasons why they don't want to. They really have to talk about their fears. Is it that they're going to gain weight? Is it that their family is going to be smoking and they're not going to be able to? Is it that they feel that they may have some emotional issues that smoking addresses that they're not going to be able to address? So to take some advice from Yoda here, that's something I think in the back of my mind when I'm working with smokers who aren't ready to quit. Really, I'm trying to focus on the reasons why they don't want to as much as I'm going to talk about with them, you know, some reasons why quitting smoking might be a good idea. So let's keep that in mind. Let's keep Yoda's wise words in mind as we move to the next slide. So as we said in the previous talk, there are stages of change. And before we get overwhelmed by all the bubbles and boxes here, what I'm really just hoping that you look at is the pre-contemplation, contemplation, and action stages. And as we know here, in pre-contemplation, a smoker is not yet ready to quit. There's someone who's saying, you know, I don't see any reason to quit smoking. You know, my wife wants me to do it, or my husband, or my partner, but I'm not yet ready. Contemplation, someone's focusing on the reasons not to change and the reasons to change. There's where the ambivalence starts to come out. In the action stage, someone, or preparation or action, people are coming into cessation centers or talking to their primary care doctor, their nurse, their psychologist, social worker about quitting. So there is someone who's ready. In that stage of change, we know what to do. If you look down, we're going to do treatment matching. That's when we can start to suggest things to them, whether that's thinking about changing their cues around smoking in a behavioral way or using the patch or Nicorette gum or some kind of substitution therapy or replacement therapy. Now, the problem really arises when people are in pre-contemplation or contemplation, when they're not really ready. And that's where we're going to talk about how to incorporate motivational interviewing into the 5R model. How do you infuse the techniques of motivational enhancement work or motivational interviewing in the work, the good work that you're all doing, and the techniques that you know so well about smoking cessation work? So if you move to the next slide, you'll see here that we have a definition of motivational interviewing, and it's one that I'm just going to review a couple slides that we might have talked about just to refresh your memory from our last talk. Really, from the perspective of Bill Miller and Steve Rolnick, who really invented this technique, they'll talk about motivational interviewing. One of the definitions is a client-centered directive method for enhancing intrinsic motivation to change by exploring and resolving ambivalence. So if you move to the next slide, I really think that we'll have a better sense of the definition by just reminding ourselves about the guiding principles. Well, what do we do when we're doing motivational enhancement work? And as we see, as we go through the 5 R's, we're going to think about how to use these principles, these guiding principles, to help guide us through using the 5 R framework. First of all, we're giving feedback on personal risks. So when we think about relevance and things like that in the 5 R model, we're going to think about what are the personal risks. Now, we know as a general risk around smoking, cancer, for example, emphysema. This is something that everyone will experience if they continue to smoke chronically. Well, personal risks are really specific consequences that may occur to a particular client or patient that you're working with. For example, someone might not be able to play basketball as well if they're smoking. Now, since not everybody plays basketball, that's a personal risk. Someone might have a granddaughter that really wants them to quit smoking. By focusing on a personal risk, you're going to have much more oomph in your intervention when you use the 5R model by thinking about, really, why is this so specifically relevant for this person? The idea of the spirit of motivational interviewing is to really arrange the conversation so that really we're not, as providers, as clinicians, as nurses, as pharmacists, really from the perspective of the clinician, we're not taking responsibility for whether someone quits smoking. And that goes into what we're going to talk about later, the idea of really the fact that, you know, this is hard work. So if we really take all the responsibility for someone quitting, it's going to put undue stress on us. What are we responsible for? We're responsible for helping people really think out the pros and cons. And when they're ready, when we work on them, with them, to develop readiness, that when they're ready, we really are going to take responsibility for offering them all kinds of strategies for how to quit. And that rolls into the next point of really advice. Right, we're definitely giving advice when we're talking about the 5-hour model, but when do we give advice? Well, we give advice when someone is motivated. So we're going to talk about how to ask questions in the next part of the talk to really help someone to increase their motivation. And then when someone's ready, of course, we're going to give them advice, whether that be talk to them about the way in which it might be beneficial for them to quit or how to deal with particular triggers around smoking. We're going to certainly give them advice, and we're going to do so, as the next bullet alludes to, in a fashion that gives them the most change, the most possibilities, the most options for how to change. Clearly, as we talked about last time, feeling empathy, rather than arguing or convincing people to quit, we're trying to talk to them about the pros and cons, because almost every smoker I've ever worked with around quitting has real solid reasons why certainly they should quit or want to quit, but also why smoking helps them in some way. And so we're trying to empathize with both parts of that ambivalence. And then lastly, one of the most important things about quitting, about helping someone who's trying to quit, is a sense of eliciting in them their reasons for why they can do it and showing that you believe in them, even if they've had some trials and tribulations, minor relapses along the way. Move to the next slide. Jeff Allison, who's also a Mint trainer, I'm part of the Motivational Interviewing Network of trainers, and Jeff Allison, who's a colleague of mine, has come up with this way of trying to define motivational interviewing, as he jokes, in English. So what he talks about is, first of all, trying not to argue or be pushy. So that goes to the principle of avoiding argumentation, trying not to argue with our patient or our clients, even if we disagree in principle with what they're talking about. Showing that we understand their perspective. This goes to the principle of expressing empathy, showing that we really understand some of the difficult processes about quitting or some of the things that they like about smoking. Being optimistic, supportive, and hopeful. Right? What we're trying to do here is really show that we believe that someone has efficacy, the self-efficacy, the ability to do this, to quit. And then exploring inconsistencies between the problem behavior and the client's goals and values. Again, thinking about what we talked about before, the personal risks. How does smoking conflict with what they want to do in life? Using open-ended questions and reflecting what they're saying to try to bring that conversation out. How does smoking impact their family life? In what ways does smoking help or hurt in terms of their job? What ways does smoking help, and what ways does smoking interfere with some of their important goals, whether they be recreational goals, occupational goals, family or lifestyle goals, to try to think about in what ways the idea of smoking or the act of smoking may conflict with those behaviors. If you go on to the next slide, we're going to talk about incorporating some of the ORS skills. As you remember from last time, or some of you might know from other talks you might have attended, motivational interviewing has some skills that we advance. Well, what are the skills? Well, first of all, asking more open-ended questions, right? Asking questions that don't end in the patient or client saying yes or no. Questions that begin with what or why or how are examples of open-ended questions, or tell me about. Then the use of affirmations, pointing out what patients or clients are doing well. This is especially important as we talked about earlier in terms of relapse. When a smoker comes back to you and relapse, rather than criticizing or pointing out what they did wrong, focus on what they've done well and how great it is that they've come back. And to think about, for example, what I do mostly in relapse is, okay, what can we learn from this relapse? And how can we help you protect next time as you're going to, when you quit again, to help you prevent that from happening again? Reflective listening, as we talked about last time, is summarizing what people are saying by reflecting back to them their emotion or their feeling or their meaning. And then summaries is really summarizing what someone has said throughout the conversation, showing, one, an understanding of what they're talking about, and two, affording you the opportunity to transition the conversation if need be. In the next slide, you'll see, as we've talked about, just a review of the spirit of motivational interviewing, that there's really too much focus sometimes on the techniques, on the ORs, and that what you can do as a provider, without even using the ORs, of course, it's very effective, and we know that it's going to be more effective in terms of smoking cessation to use more of the ORs techniques. But one thing you can think about is just trying to be in the spirit of motivational interviewing. What does that mean? Well, first of all, it means trying to focus on eliciting from the client or the patient motivation, rather than trying to suggest to them why they should quit. And that really focusing on getting the client or the patient to voice the reasons for change, to help them to talk about the pros and cons. We know that persuading or trying to talk people into quitting doesn't really work. And that the idea of being ready for change is not necessarily just based on where the client or the patient is, but can be really impacted by the way in which we talk to them. If we're in the spirit of MI, being non-judgmental, non-confrontational, expressing an empathic view of where the client or the patient is, if we're using our ORs, we have the ability to work with really resistant people, resistant patients, resistant clients, and help them to move along the stages of change to be more contemplative about quitting smoking. And that we're trying to develop, in the last bullet here, we're trying to develop a partnership. We're trying to collaborate rather than be an expert. We're trying to develop a partnership with our patient or our client around the decision-making process around quitting smoking. In the next slide, you'll see a more graphic representation of this. So if you look down at the bottom, you'll see that there's sort of three ideas about the spirit of motivational interviewing that we're going to try to infuse here into the 5R model. One is collaboration. The nice thing about the 5R model is that there are some aspects of it that are very, very easily synthesizable, that we can really combine easily with motivational interviewing or motivational enhancement. We're trying to be collaborative in that we're trying to have an attitude in our conversation that says, this isn't me just about counseling you about how to quit smoking, but I'm really trying to understand your life. I'm really trying to understand the ways in which smoking affects you and the ways that, you know, it makes it hard for you in your life and all the ways that maybe smoking makes things easier in your perception. We're trying to evoke or elicit in the client or in the patient their reasons for change. We're trying to find the hooks or their reasons for wanting to quit smoking. And we're really focusing on autonomy, that it's the client or the patient's choice about if and how they're going to make a change around smoking. And while that certainly none of us would be on this phone call, the hundreds of people that joined in today would not be here if we didn't really want people to quit. We have a strong vested interest. But in the conversation, we're going to focus on their choice about what they want to do. So if you see on the left there, there's an arrow, being to behaving. So that's really the way of being, the spirit, the style. Some people refer to motivational interviewing as a way of being in the room with our patients or clients. And as we go moving up that ladder or that arrow from being to behaving, we're getting more specific in terms of the skills. So our goals are really in the room with our consulting rooms or our offices. We're trying to express empathy, as I talked about before, avoiding argumentation, rolling with resistance, developing discrepancy, and supporting self-efficacy, as we were defining just a minute earlier. And in that, as far as the techniques, we're going to be asking more open-ended questions. We're listening reflectively. We're trying to find ways to affirm our patients or clients and summarizing what they're saying, all for the purposes of eliciting from them their change talk, or, in other words, their reasons for changing or quitting smoking. So, in the next slide, you'll see that, you know, this poor woman has run out of gas. And so, why do I have this interesting photo up here? Well, first of all, many people ask me in the trainings I do and in the consulting work I do about, you know, well, what about integrating motivational interviewing with other techniques? What about integrating it with, for example, counseling techniques, cognitive behavioral therapy, solution-focused therapy, problem-solving techniques? Well, for the purposes of this phone call, how are we going to integrate or bring motivational interviewing into the work we're doing with a 5R model in terms of smoking cessation? Well, here's the analogy that I'd like you to think about. Well, for example, you know, I would really like to have a new car. I have my Pathfinder, the muffler's kind of falling off, and I'd like to buy a new car. And if I could buy a new car, I'd like to have a Lamborghini. So now I could have a Lamborghini, and it could be one of the fastest, most beautiful cars. I'd like it in yellow, actually. I think that would be a nice way to have it. So if I have my yellow Lamborghini, and I'm driving it around, I'm in good shape. It's the best car. It's a great car for me. Now, what happens if I run out of gas? The question is, how well will that Lamborghini serve me? What could I do with it? Well, in my opinion, probably if I didn't have any gas to put in the car, it would be an excellent couch, a nice leather seat for me to sit in. And so when we think about using that, I'll say that the 5R model is like a Lamborghini of sorts. It's a great model for understanding and how to work with smoking cessation. Now, without motivation, there's no gas for that car. So what we frequently happens when we're using the 5R model or any of the great techniques like cognitive behavioral therapy or other techniques, counseling techniques that we would work with a particular person around behavioral modeling, whatever it is that we're talking about with smoking cessation, if we don't have gas, then we can't make the model move. And so that's what I'd like to think about. And the punchline here, obviously, is really what we're talking about is that motivational interviewing or motivational enhancement is the gas. That motivation is what can help us to really have a powerful use of the model, the 5R model, or whatever model we're using. So what I'm going to talk about in the next few slides is how to really bring motivational interviewing into the excellent work that all of you are already doing in applying the 5R model and other models in terms of smoking cessation. How do you infuse that work with more motivation? How do you bring out motivation, rather, from our clients and patients? So if you move on to the next slide, the 5R model, as almost all of you are familiar with, involves several components, thinking about the relevance, risk, rewards, roadblocks, and repetition around smoking cessation. So I'm going to go one by one through those principles and think about some aspects of motivational interviewing, mostly think about the use of open-ended questions and how specifically you might incorporate more of a motivational enhancement perspective into the work you're doing. So in the next slide here, you'll see relevance. So what are the goals of relevance? Well, first of all, from a motivational interviewing perspective, we want to know why the patient wants to quit, and also to remind ourselves that there's a possibility that they don't want to quit, even if they're sitting there with you. They've been sent by their wife, husband, child, grandchild, grandmother to you. You really want to evaluate sort of what's going on around that and allow for the possibility they may be a pre-contemplator and they might not want to quit. So here are some suggestions. By no means are these prescriptive, meaning that they're going to work for every person. However, they may be a good start for you to think about enhancing motivation or assessing motivation. What reasons do you have for wanting to quit? Okay, it's an open-ended question. Let's say you decided to quit tomorrow. What do you think would be your main reasons for doing so? And that's a nice question to ask people who maybe have low motivation because it's envisioning. Although they don't want to quit now, let's say you decided to quit tomorrow. Let's say you changed your mind. What do you think would be your main reason for doing so? What reasons would you have for doing so? In that, even with someone who's not ready to quit, you may bring out some of their hooks, some of their reasons, their personal risks, some of the reasons that they might want to quit. So that would be a very powerful question for someone, even if they were a pre-contemplator. So let's move on to the next aspect of the 5R model, risks. What do you want to do here from a motivational learning perspective? Well, our objective up top here is to find out which risks are most important to the client to avoid. What do they want to avoid? So what can you ask? Well, what do you make of health risks we discussed? So one of the things that people do sort of in smoking cessation is some education at some point. That you may have a person, perhaps it's a younger smoker, or perhaps it's someone who you just believe for various reasons doesn't understand some of the consequences of smoking. And it's absolutely okay to provide some information about health risks. So one of the things that you might want to do is after you provide that feedback about whatever aspect of health risk you're talking about regarding smoking, to ask them in an open-ended way, so what do you make of that? How do you understand that? Then you can get some ideas of in what way that those consequences may or may not, and we really have to allow for the possibility that they may not impact them. Now, personally, it's hard to believe that something like emphysema or being diagnosed with lung cancer wouldn't impact someone. But there are some people that are not going to be impacted by those risks, and therefore, from a motivational interviewing perspective, it's not that effective to focus on those. Of all the negative things you know about smoking, what worries you the most? Okay. So those are examples of questions that you can ask in a motivational way and work them into your idea of the 5R model in terms of focusing on risks. How about the next aspect here, rewards? From a motivational perspective, what do we want to do? Well, we want to understand what positive benefits of quitting that the client or the patient might value. What will they get out of quitting smoking? So what could you ask them? Well, here's an open-ended question to give you a sense of how motivational interviewing would approach this. What would be the most important things you will gain by quitting? Okay. So that's a question that you could ask to really assess the reasons for quitting. And that's just one of many. So I'm giving you suggestions about specific suggestions. When we think back to that sort of pyramid I showed you about going from being, right, which are collaborating, evoking in clients, their reasons for change, and client autonomy, we're talking about specifically how you use open-ended questions, the specific micro skills of motivational interviewing, and aligning those with the 5R model. So let's move on here to the next slide, roadblocks. Really, we want to figure out with the client what are the significant barriers that might block them from being able to quit successfully. So simply, you know, what are the things that make it difficult for you to quit? And we really want to, as we think about asking all these questions, we want to, after we ask these questions, we're eliciting some important information from them. And we want to provide empathy. How? Well, by reflecting. So you might ask this question, what are the things that make it difficult for you to quit? Now, in my experience, some of the common things that people will say around smoking are, well, I'm afraid I'm going to gain weight. They may say, well, I tried to quit before, and I didn't work so well. My husband, wife, partner smokes, so it's difficult for me. Smoking is a way I relieve stress. You know, I don't really drink and I don't do other things, so smoking is my way to relax. So rather than argue with these techniques, what we're going to try to do is after we've identified this roadblock in the 5R model, we're really going to empathize as much as possible with them by saying, you know, so what I'm hearing you saying is it's really hard for you to think about quitting because everyone in your family smokes. Or, okay, so for you, quitting smoking is hard because you're worried about putting on that weight. By identifying and then empathizing with the barriers, you're going to have a much greater success when it comes to eliciting the reasons that it would be beneficial to quit. If you move on to the next slide here in terms of repetition, now this is something that Andy Beigel alluded to earlier, that, you know, one of the things we know about smoking cessation is that there's a lot of relapse involved in many cases. And so that you may need to revisit any of these steps in relapse situation, or if someone is just resistant. And also, rather than think about a relapse, you know, one of the things I think about sort of relapse is one of the ways that I stay motivated in terms of doing this work is instead of thinking of relapse as failure, I say, okay, this is my opportunity to learn more about this person I'm working with and help protect them against the next time that they're challenged again in their sobriety or in their non-use or cessation around smoking. To turn to the next slide, to cease smoking is the easiest thing I ever did. I had to know because I've done it 1,000 times. So Mark Twain here is speaking about the intense difficulty that people experience around smoking. Many people quit and quit and quit again, and it doesn't stick until the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th time. And our goal is to hang in there with them. So what are we doing? What are we trying, as we're hanging in with them, what are we trying to do? Well, turn to the next slide. We're looking for the difference between what we call change talk and sustained talk. So as a provider, as a smoking cessation counselor, as a physician, nurse, if you're a psychologist listening on this call, pharmacist, counselor, really whatever aspect of smoking cessation specialty you come from, our goal is really to try to elicit speech or talk from self-motivational statements about reasons for quitting, right? Goals, movement in terms of the direction of why should I quit smoking? And we're trying to, in essence, roll with the resistance, not ignore it, but just really not engage so much on sustained talk, right? We're trying to identify why someone wants to quit and why they don't want to quit. Now, with quitting, we're going to try to do our best to elaborate on that. And with sustained talk, we're really going to roll with the resistance, reflect, show them we understand their reasons to continue smoking. If you move to the next slide here, we have a wonderful quote by George Burns. I smoke 10 to 15 cigars a day. At my age, I have to hold on to something. That is a perfect example of resistance, and it's really what we talk about is sustained talk. That's reasons to, as funny as it is, that's reasons to continue to smoke. So change talk is difficult sometimes to really find change talk. So if you go to the next slide, well, what do you see here? Most of you probably looking at this picture will say, well, I see a plane. Good, we're on the right track here. So what kind of plane? FedEx. Okay, well, what do you see in that? Look, take a look at that FedEx logo. What do you see there? Most people will say, well, I see some letters. There's two different colors. Well, let's click to the next slide and see if we could see anything more specifically. there's the FedEx logo up close. Now, before this was made to my attention, I hadn't noticed this either, but if you look carefully at this FedEx logo, if you look carefully, you should see that there's actually a shape within that logo. I'll give you a second there. If people's phone were unmuted here, I'd probably see a lot of O's and ah's, and there may be some very spatially sophisticated people who already noticed this, but I didn't. But if you look between the E and the X, you'll notice that there is an arrow in the FedEx logo. So in the E and the X, right there between the two lower arms of the E, you'll see an arrow pointing towards the right. It's a white arrow that pops up out at you in the orange lettering. It's moving towards the right there. And if you don't see it, that's okay. You will eventually, looking at it, it's popping out at us, that white arrow. And so that's what I want you to think about when you're thinking about trying to find that change talk, that it could be very hidden. It's powerful, and it's there, and it exists, and it has meaning, just like this arrow has meaning. Perhaps about FedEx's, now that depends, of course, on your experience with receiving FedEx packages reliably, but assuming that you have, that has a message about their ability to move things forward. So there's a message in each of our clients and patients, even when it seems like all they're saying is reasons to quit. There's change talk there. And it's our goal to look deeply into their logo of their life and try to find it. Okay, so that's one thing that we can really work on using motivational interviewing, using open-ended questions, is to think about where are they talking about change, even if they're 99% talking about sustaining our reasons not to quit. So let's look at a case. Well, here's a case. I'll read it. I've been smoking for 17 years, basically since high school. Smoking is a double-edged sword. On one hand, it's the only way that I know how to relax. On the other, I know it's bad for me. My kid is 5, and he even tells me to quit. It's just hard, you know. After all these years, some habits are hard to break. I've had a cough, and that isn't going away, and that stresses me out. I mean, you never know. But I don't see myself without a smoke here and there. So here's someone who, what I would say, is in the stage, which stage do we think people are? What? Just, you know, let's think about this, all the people listening in here around the state, and what stage is someone like this in? I'm tempted to say probably contemplation, in that there's pros and cons for quitting smoking here. So I want you to think about, where's the change talk here? Before we move on, and I'm going to count on you guys not to cheat and turn to the next slide yet, but just think about that for a second. Where's the change talk? Let's move on to the next slide. Here are some hooks or some reasons for change. Well, certainly he mentioned his relationship with his son, and also he mentioned the cough. So those are some hooks. In other words, some reasons for change, some things that if we talked about might be things that would promote more change talk and possibly movement from contemplation, to preparation or reasons for change. In the next slide, I'm going to illustrate some of the things in that, some of the statements that this particular client or patient made that I would consider change talk. I know it's bad for me. My kid is 5, and he even tells me to quit. I've had a cough that isn't going away, and that stresses me out. You never know. The reason I put "you never know" in here is because the way in which this client said it almost intimated to me that they had some future-oriented health concerns related to smoking. So that's, again, when we go back to thinking about the arrow. You never know could sound like nothing. Oh, you never know. But you never know could have meaning as far as the consequences regarding smoking, continuing to smoke. So we're looking for that. Even when we have patients or clients who aren't ready to quit looking at from the outside, we're looking for that change talk, and we're trying to ask open-ended questions to elicit it while we're going through our 5 R's, and then use reflections to reflect some of this change talk. So what you're saying is that, you know, you have some concerns about smoking having negative consequences. Sounds like you're worried, or you have some thoughts about your son telling you to quit. Oh, so that cough has been something that you're concerned about, okay? Some ways to reflect that. So if you go on to the next slide, one of the things that we're talking about here in terms of the 5 R's are affirmation, okay? So affirmations, really from the perspective of motivational interviewing, we talked about reflections last time. This time we're focusing mostly on open-ended questions and affirmations. Affirmations, really, we're trying to acknowledge that quitting smoking can be a struggle and that there can be a lot of difficulties there. And that we're trying to point out whatever, even if someone relapses, we're trying to point out their successes. So what could you say if someone comes in and they quit for a month and then they relapsed? Well, you could certainly focus on their relapse, or you could just say to them, you know what, you went a month, and that says a lot about your ability and commitment to this. Also, you could focus on their skills or strengths, their goals or values. Essentially, what we're trying to do is, instead of focusing only on the negative, try to catch some positive action here. Catch them being good. We turn to the next slide. Here are some examples of affirmations you could say. It takes courage to face these difficult problems. This is really hard work you're doing. You know, you really care a lot about your family. Your anger is understandable. It must have taken a lot of courage to come in today, knowing that we're going to talk about you slipping up and having a few cigarettes. You go to the next slide. Here's an example of a angry client that you might have to deal with. Hopefully not this angry, but you know the Hulk here. If I don't have a cigarette, I may get angry, and you wouldn't like me when I'm angry. What I'll say is, you know, I've been doing smoking cessation work in conjunction with other kind of therapies for a long time, and one thing that I know is that it can be very frustrating to deal with angry clients, persistent clients, and patients or clients who continue to relapse. This is very hard work, as was alluded to at the beginning of this phone call. So I want to just, as I'm wrapping up, give you a couple ideas about how we can enhance our own motivation and keep our motivation going as providers, as clinicians, and smoking cessation specialists. So if you go to the next slide, you know, as I said, really, it can be very difficult to work with challenging or resistant clients or patients. It can exhaust us, it can frustrate us, and also we can get confused and frankly angry. So one of the things that I want to just introduce just for a few minutes before we wrap up the call is the idea of our own self-care and being mindful, our own mindfulness, our own ability to stay in the moment. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that in the next few slides before we wrap up. In the next slide, you'll see that there's some ideas of what you can do if you get frustrated. One is to excuse yourself. Even if you just leave the room for a brief second, if you're getting in a situation where you're arguing or you're getting really frustrated or you're just feeling not optimistic, to excuse yourself or just take a quick walk in between patients. One family doctor I work with said that, you know, he used to just go to the bathroom or someplace where he could just clear his mind so he wasn't getting so frustrated. And then ask yourself, what do I want to do now? What is my goal? What do I hope to accomplish in this meeting? In the next slide, I'm going to give you some what I call mindfulness to go techniques. Here's your fast food mindfulness, which seems like an oxymoron in some way, but these are techniques that many providers have used and have suggested are very helpful. First of all, before you see or call a difficult patient, take 3 deep breaths and smile. What we know is that by behaving in a way that's consistent with how we hope to feel, we can sometimes reverse the process and begin to feel less angry or frustrated. Some ideas for what you can do before you see each patient to keep yourself mindful and have a good attitude about the process is to have a ritual. Take a minute to focus. One thing you can do is you can imagine that this is the first client or the first patient you've ever seen. Think back to when you first came out of whatever schooling you had or whatever training you had around this process, whether that was becoming a counselor or becoming a physician or becoming a nurse or becoming a psychologist or a therapist. Think back to the first time. I certainly remember the first client I worked with and how energetic I was. And try to harness that experience and bring it into the room. Imagine that this is the last person you'll ever have a chance to work with and how much energy you might put into it if you were going to retire right after this person. Try to put everything out of your mind by focusing on one detail. Maybe make your goal, you could say, just asking open-ended questions with a difficult person. One counselor I worked with talked about coming to a full stop. Try as best you can, if you're working with a difficult patient, to put everything else down, your BlackBerry, the electronic medical record, whatever it is that's distracting you, and just try to focus purely on this person as if they were someone you were talking to, as if they were, for example, a parent or a child of yours. And then one of the things that's a tough order, but what many people have focused to, is meditation can be a way to really focus and increase your productivity in terms of your own clinical work. People suggest meditating for 20 to 30 minutes, and certainly I can provide more information about that, as I'll detail later. My contact information is in this PowerPoint information. In the next slide, I'm going to just leave you with this guide, this mindfulness meditation. This is by Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a pretty well-known figure in the world of meditation, and who many psychologists have begun to incorporate into the work they're doing in terms of cognitive therapy, etc. So I'll lead you through this meditation, and then I'm going to turn the call over in a minute to Pat Bax from New York State Quitline. So and what you could do is, you, if you feel up to it, I know a lot of people are in groups here, and you could read this with me if you feel up to that. It's obviously your choice about how much you participate, but I believe that, you know, many of you might gain some benefit from finding some way to meditate, even if it's just to repeat some idea or meditation or focus point. So I'll read it, and feel free to read along if you so choose. Breathing in, I know I'm breathing in. Breathing out, I know I'm breathing out. Breathing in, my breath grows deep. Breathing out, my breath grows slowly. Aware of my body, I breathe in. Relaxing my body, I breathe out. Calming my body, I breathe in. Caring for my body, I breathe out. Smiling to my body, I breathe in. Easing my body, I breathe out. Smiling to my body, I breathe in. Releasing the tensions in my body, I breathe out. Feeling the joy of being alive, I breathe in. Feeling happy, I breathe out. Dwelling in the now, I breathe in. Enjoying the present moment, I breathe out. Aware of my stable posture, I breathe in. Enjoying the stability, I breathe out. I'm glad I got the opportunity to share that meditation with you. Clearly, obviously, as we're dealing with respiratory behavior here, there are some aspects of this that relate in terms of the breath work. And what you can do, if you have a client or a patient that's open to this, and some are not, you can also do this meditation with them in terms of a way to focus and deal with some of the troubling sensations that occur when someone is dealing with some of the delay of gratification that's required in quitting smoking. If you move on to the next slide, what I will just do is allow you to think about ways you can continue learning motivational interviewing. There is further reading, the book in the second edition. There's also information on the Motivational Interviewing website about all different kinds of training. You can seek supervision or coaching or form a peer discussion group. You can attend more trainings. And also there's information. I do a ton of trainings for healthcare providers across the nation and also in New York State. There's information on my website about how to get more training in motivational interviewing. That's just www.jonathanfader.com. And you can certainly check that out. So we'll move on to the last slide here of questions, but before we take questions, I'd just like to turn the call back over to Pat Bax, who's the marketing coordinator for the New York State Quitline. And before I do that, I'd also just like to thank Pat, because Pat has done an enormous amount of work at making these online seminars, these conference calls, available to all you across New York State. So I really have to applaud her hard work and her creative effort in this process.
Well, thank you, Dr. Fader, for another excellent presentation and for your kind words. After your presentation, I'm even more motivated to share the exciting updates from the New York State Smokers Quitline. As you may have noticed on our website, we're launching a new look and a feel to our website and our print materials, including our Break Loose guides. We've added posters for downloading as well as updated fact sheets, which are located on our website at www.nysmokefree.com. We invite you to visit our site frequently as we continue to provide you with the updates. For those of you who may not be familiar with the Quitline services, our 2008 report is available on our website under Newsletters and Reports on the left-hand side of our website, and it highlights our services, our outcomes, and our accomplishments. We're also very pleased to announce our Chat Cafe, which is conducted every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday from 12 to 2 p.m. Please encourage your patients or clients to spend some of their lunchtime with our Quit coaches, who also have received training in motivational interviewing. Of course, you are also welcome to join us. And here at the Quitline, we're ready to answer your questions and provide assistance as you need it. For more information, please call us at 1-866-NY-QUITS. That's 1-866-697-8487. And thank you for joining us today on our call. At this time, we will be opening it up for questions.
Thank you, ma'am. If you have a question at this time, you may press 01 on your telephone keypad. Once again, to enter into the question queue, you may press 01 on your telephone keypad. And I do have two questions in the queue, and the first one comes from Robin. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Robin Bunch. I work at the Washington Cancer Institute here in Washington, D.C. We see a lot of comorbidities, people with cancer who continue to smoke. Is there any advice on how to approach a person that has comorbidities? They're really, really stressed out about the cancer treatment and so forth, and they cling to the cigarette as if it's their last hope. Any advice on this?
Well, Robin, first of all, I thank you for your question. I think it's an excellent one, and I think you're in an extremely challenging place at working with people who have this level of progressed illness, related to smoking. And certainly I have worked with people around similar issues, and I can tell you that I can identify that, you're doing really hard work. Specifically, to answer your question, when you have someone who is already has, for example, lung cancer, let's just say they have stage 3 or 4 lung cancer, and they're continuing to smoke, at this point, they probably have some very good reasons for not smoking, considering that they have cancer, but they also probably have some really good, excellent reasons for smoking. So I'll give you an example of what I've experienced in terms of working with people like that, that particularly people like that will say things like, it's the only thing I have left. I'm really emotionally distraught, and it's the only thing I have left is to smoke. Now, from my perspective, what I really want them to do is to quit, right? It may be that they have an increased recovery rate, or that they might have increased longevity, and they may be able to live with their cancer longer if they quit smoking. So certainly I want them to do that. One of the things I have to do, which is so difficult, is I have to sort of, first, before I can be effective to them, give up my goal that they quit and focus on helping them to understand their pros and cons. So one of the things that I've noticed that's been really effective is just really to talk about, for increased more time than I even suggested in this talk, what smoking does for them. To really show that I have an understanding of their long-term relationship with smoking and how it's involved in their life, and to show that, well, I'm not going to say that I agree with it, I completely understand the ways in which smoking is going, it helps them, and smoking helps them to deal with their stress. I find that the more I can effectively do that, the more they may be able to open up, as you think back to that FedEx example, open up and start to talk a little bit more about their reasons for quitting, which are obviously with someone who's, as you alluded to, with smoking cancer, there's many reasons to do so. Also with someone like that, I'm going to rely more on the sort of the powers and the intensity of affirmation. If someone is chronically ill, if someone is terminally ill, that's someone who really has lost a lot of hope usually, and that I can do a lot, not just around their smoking, but around their overall quality of life, by trying to affirm whatever I can. For example, if I'm working with someone in a cancer treatment setting, and I notice that they have a lot of family members there, even before I address anything about smoking, I'll try to find something that I can affirm about their relationships, something that I could point out that's wonderful about them or about their lives. Because, as you know very well and could probably teach others on this phone call, someone who's in that state of affairs often doesn't have a lot to look positively, to look forward to, or in their life at the moment. So you can sort of build some kind of self-efficacy around quitting smoking, or even just thinking about how to minimize tobacco use, if you can really focus on starting off from a good place rather than focus on something that they need to do.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for the excellent question.
And I do have two more questions in the queue. And the next question comes from Robert. Go ahead, sir.
Hello.
Robert.
Yes, I'm the medical director down at a Creedmoor Addiction Treatment Center, which is one of the New York State inpatient addiction treatment centers. We have a mandate for our patients not to smoke. It's mostly a youngish demographic, probably average age about 30, who have no interest in quitting smoking. They're coming in for heroin addiction, crack cocaine addiction, sometimes alcohol along with those two things. And we have a lot of trouble. I provide nicotine replacement therapy to everybody that comes in, but we have a lot of trouble motivating interest in quitting smoking at the same time that we're working on all the other issues that present themselves.
But imagine so. That's sort of the biggest challenge I could possibly imagine in terms of dealing with resistant people. And I mean, I think what you're alluding to, certainly when people come in who are crack addicted or have a heroin problem, the last thing on their mind is quitting something like smoking.
That's right.
and I think it's a very big predicament. So one of the things that, you know, Robert, that you're alluding to, that if I'm understanding you right, is sort of how to deal with mandates, either if they're coming internally or externally. And when you have something like that where, you know, there's really no choice, people are everybody is going to be suggested to quit smoking. So how do you work motivational interviewing into that?
Well, they're not suggested. It's not a suggestion. They're thrown out if they smoke.
So basically, it's law.
It's the law, and they're all in pre-contemplation.
So, you know, mainly what I would do there is, when what you're talking about is, what do you do with the total pre-contemplator?
Right.
What do you do with someone that really doesn't have any reasons to change and has no sense of it? So I'll give you a couple strategies here. And really, one of the ways that, you know, I think you can really gain a lot from this is to, you know, certainly attend more training on motivational interviewing, but I think your question is one that is at the heart of sort of what you do with motivational interviewing. Motivational interviewing was actually developed to work with the people that you're talking about. Really, not around smoking, but more around drinking.
Right.
And it was really developed, as Robert is suggesting for the group here, and I'm glad he raised this question, to really work with people who really don't want to quit. So what do you do with someone like that? Well, the focus really is on asking, is more about, you know, don't just do something, sit there. That, in other words, instead of confronting these people and saying to them, you know, really, you got to quit because that's what's going to happen, is just to take a more neutral stance in terms of what they have to do and take a much more directive stance in helping them think out the consequence. So, for example, with a person like this, the questions that you would ask are sort of, what's going to happen if you continue to smoke? And so, you know, if they're someone that, you know, has any ability at visioning the future, they might say, well, all right, well, I'll get kicked out of the program, right? Because that's sort of one, as Robert's saying, is the law of that program. So rather than telling them what's going to happen, try to orchestrate the conversation so they're giving the reasons, they're telling us what will happen if they don't quit smoking. Oh, so you get kicked out of the program. What would that be like for you? Well, I don't know. Okay, well, it sounds like you're having difficulty figuring that out, but let's just think it out together because, you know, honestly, I can't make a choice for you. You know, obviously there are these rules, and, you know, I work here, so we're going to have to abide by these rules, but I can't make a choice for you. If you decide to smoke, you know, these are the consequences. But I'm just curious about, you know, from your perspective, how you see this working for you. Well, I guess if I got kicked out, I'd have to, you know, go do this. And then talk about with them the pros and cons of the results of that behavior. So one of the ways in which I deal with pre-contemplators and with the case that Robert's talking about is to not focus so much on them quitting smoking, but focus more on developing the relationship so that we can talk more about the pros and cons of actually quitting. That when there's someone who's a pre-contemplator, we often get focused on trying to get them to quit rather than trying to help them think about what are the reasons for quitting. And also, as we said, the responsibility always lies with the person there. So, you know, I work as hard as I can until I work up a sweat with a pre-contemplator, but not on getting them to quit. I work as hard as I can at trying to getting them engaged in the process of thinking about what are the pros and cons of quitting, and as hard as I can at trying to search out even the pre-contemplator. What I believe is that there's 1% of that person that wants to quit. Maybe it's 99%, I don't care, I'm just here to deal with the heroin or deal with the crack, but in my belief, there's always 1%, if we can really use the motivational interviewing techniques that we're going to get to, is sort of their particular reason.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Thanks for the great question.
I do have two more questions in the queue, and the next one is from Amanda.
Hi.
Hi, Amanda.
I primarily work in with methadone maintained patients, and one of the lines that I'm coming across a lot is, I really want to quit, but I just don't think I can. I'm an addict, and so they very much want to be non-smokers, but they sort of feel defeated before they've started, and it, despite the fact that they're already in a program where they're getting methadone. Sometimes for many years in order to stay off of other drugs. They're not seeing the connect there that it is possible, you know, to quit a substance.
So that is a great question. I'll point out why, because what you're talking about is pessimism.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're talking about is something that we see a lot in the addictions, not just smoking, but other, and this is something that alludes to Robert's question too. You know, what do you do with people that come in and that are pessimistic about it for whatever reason, either because they don't want to or because they don't think they can?
Mm-hmm.
And so when someone is coming in for methadone maintenance or methadone treatment, you know, that's typically someone who's been an opiate user for a considerable amount of time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a lot of failure in their background. Mm-hmm. When someone comes in and says, you know, I really want to quit, but I actually am very excited about that statement because it tells me that they're not in pre-contemplation, they're in contemplation.
Mm-hmm.
I hear that, but. So what I'm there's two things that I would do on a strategic level with that person. I may say, well, okay, it sounds like, you know, you have some thoughts about not being able to do it. What are the reasons that you want to quit?
Okay.
So I'll ask an open-ended question to bring out their specific motivations for wanting to quit and focus on bringing that out. And then I'll also talk to them about, really, I throw away my goal, and I try to get as close as I can to the patient's experience. So if they're talking about their inability to quit, I want to know exactly why. I'm not going to argue with them about it. I might try to boost their self-efficacy later, but I want to know what about them being an addict is something that makes them feel. And I'll try to do a lot of what we call double-sided reflection. Right? So on the one hand, it sounds like you've had a lot of experiences around failure and quitting. On the other hand, you tell me you really want to quit because you really want to see your granddaughter's birthday, and you feel like if you continue to smoke, you might miss it. Or, you know, it sounds like you have a lot, that there's some reasons why you are kind of pessimistic about your ability to quit. However, you see yourself as a strong Christian person or a strong Jewish person, or your connection with your religion is something that makes you really want to maintain sobriety in every aspect of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So really trying to bring that out, not shy away from that dilemma, because it is a dilemma, especially with people who have experienced some failure, but to express empathy and connect to that with them and help them to see their reasons for wanting to quit.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Dr. Fader, I think we have room for one more question.
Okay.
The next one comes from Dr. Aboa.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for another great presentation. My question, and actually case is not exactly as the previous two callers. However, I have patients who have increased or started drinking heavily after their World Trade Center exposures. And how do we address that? Because I've heard in the past not to try to address smoking and alcohol, you know, increase alcohol intake. But I think that we still have to address both of them. And one of the recommendations, in addition to utilizing the techniques you've talked about, is to recommend that they open a savings account, bank account, you know, a smoking cessation bank account, and ask them what would they want to be doing with that money that they saved from smoking, how many cigarettes or how many packs of cigarettes per day.
Well, Dr. Aboa, you said your name was Aboa?
Aboaba.
Aboaba. Dr. Aboaba, I mean, so what you're raising, if I'm understanding you correctly, is a couple of different issues. One is the idea of people who've had World Trade Center exposure and are drinking because of that and smoking, and also this idea of one of the things to bring into the conversation is the financial ramifications of smoking.
Yes, in addition, of course, to the health ramifications.
Right. So the first thing, you know, is a very complicated, there's several factors involved there. I'm not sure I'll be able to answer it in detail, but I will say that motivational interviewing has been shown to be effective for many different health and mental health issues, increasing motivation to get treatment around PTSD, increasing motivation to get treatment about a lot of different mental health issues. Certainly motivational interviewing can be helpful in that. So using these techniques to talk about reasons why people wouldn't want to and would want to get some treatment for PTSD around a traumatic event like 9/11, you can certainly use motivational interviewing. In fact, I did a training for the New York City Department of Health around that recently. Around the second issue that you're talking about around financial aspects of smoking can be a major hook. Now, from the perspective of motivational enhancement work, certainly you could recommend something to someone. I would recommend that to them in a stage of change around preparation or action when they are ready for advice. However, you can certainly bring financial issues into the discussion, and it is very helpful to bring them in any stage of change, even the pre-contemplators. And the way I do that is to ask them, you know, how much money are you spending on smoking? In what way does that or does that not impact your life? Because I want them to tell me in what ways financial aspects of smoking impact their life. As we know, personal risks, financial aspects are not important for everybody. For example, you know, if you're working with a smoker who's a stockbroker on Wall Street, that's much different than working with someone who's a farmhand in upper New York, in you know, around, for example, the Buffalo region. There's going to be a lot of differences in how those people approach spending the amount of money, spending the thousands of dollars a year on cigarettes. So the financial aspect may be very important for someone of a lower socioeconomic bracket and less important for someone you might be working with who has the money to spend. So you really want to think about the way in which that financial consequence or risk may be impacting that person, and then you can use it accordingly in your discussion with them. But that's a very good thing to be thinking about, certainly.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. We've got to bring our call to a close today. And on behalf of the New York State Cessation Center Collaborative, the New York State Department of Health's Tobacco Control Program, and the New York State Smokers Quit Line, we want to sincerely thank you, Dr. Fader, for your presentation today. And those of you who are listening, please mark your calendars for our next call. We'll be on November 4th. The topic, Nurses Making a Difference in Tobacco Use Cessation. And this brings us to the end of today's call. Thank you, everyone, for participating, and have a good day.